Good evening, everyone. I wish to thank you for listening in to the Ascension Secrets of Saint Germain show. I'm Troika Saint Germain, and before I introduce you to my fascinating guest, I want to give you the call-in numbers. Unfortunately, I left that piece of paper at my other desk, so I'm walking. And those numbers are, if you're within the United States, you want to call 877-876-5227. And if you're in Canada, your toll-free number is 888-810-8322. Those that are international other than Canada, unfortunately, we do not have a toll-free number for you. You'll have to call in direct to area code 530-876-3222. So now that that's over, you know, the show is about ascension and about Saint Germain and the violet flame and all kinds of stuff. And I just recently met a gentleman who has had four very unique experiences with Saint Germain in physical manifestations, and I wanted him to let all of you know about these experiences. His name is Kenneth McNeil, and without further ado, here's Kenneth. Say hi, Kenneth.
Hi, me.
Hello.
Hi, Kenneth.
Okay, it's going to be one of those nights. I hear my voice being repeated, like an echo somewhere. I don't know what that is, but hopefully it's not going to interfere with the listeners. So I was doing a session for a lady, and one of my ascension sessions, and afterwards we started talking, and
Troika,
she told me about Kenneth.
Can I break in here, Troika?
Yes.
Only because I want the sound to be perfect for your show.
Only because what?
I can't
hear you, Don.
I'd love...
Now I can.
Okay, sorry. I'd like the sound for your show to be perfect.
Mm-hmm.
Okay? So, are you hearing them okay? Are you hearing the caller okay?
Oh, a caller? No, I'm barely hearing Kenneth.
Okay, caller, are you there?
Yes.
Well,
I hear.
Now you hear him, caller?
I'm here. Yes.
Speak up, please, caller.
Okay.
Well, there you go. Did you just get on another line or something? Because I was trying to draw you in. And,
no, we were trying to listen via the internet.
That's why there's the echo.
And it's delayed, so I just muted everything on the computer.
And I'm still hearing an echo.
Well, then I'll disconnect that. I'll disconnect that completely. Now you should.
So, Kenneth, are you still there?
Yes, there's somebody else talking. I said probably.
Right, we have a call in.
It's a call in.
Who's our call-in?
Who am I?
Yes.
Michael.
Michael. Hi, Michael.
Michael and Julie.
Michael and Julie?
Exactly.
Okay.
I knew he'd spoil it.
Oh, do you know them?
We're dear friends.
Oh, Michael and Julie.
Exactly.
Yes. Okay. Well, I was just telling...
I don't know what he's doing on the line, but that's all right.
I was just starting to tell the listeners that that I was doing a session for someone, and that since you've identified yourself, it was Julie. And that after the session, Julie told me about Kenneth and that I should call him. And I did, and I heard his fabulous stories, and so now I have him on the show so other people can hear his fabulous stories. Hello?
I'm waiting for Michael to stop talking.
I can't hear Michael.
Michael, are you there?
I guess we lost Michael. Okay, well, anyway.
This is Julie, by the way.
Hi. Gosh, there's so many people on the line, and I can barely hear anyone, and I keep hearing echoes because I guess people are listening to.
Okay, let's give this another shot. Is everybody having problems hearing each other? Is that what's going on?
I am.
All right. Well, Let's try this.
I think we've got too many lines going.
Well, I don't know, because I only have two going. I have the caller and the host and their guest.
Oh, well, I'm the guest, but I guess Julie wants to talk or Michael wants to talk or something. I don't know.
Well, I just wanted to say that, yes, that is true, that I talked to Troika about Kenneth, who is a dear friend, and that's how they met.
Okay, it's one of the lines. It's one of the
lines.
So
why don't we let Ken tell his stories? Unless you have something else you want to input, Julie? Don, are Mike and Julie still on?
You know, I got to tell you, somebody's on because I'm hearing so much noise and static right now.
I am too.
Yeah, it's in.
Do you think it's this phone?
It could very well be your phone, sir, because it. I mean.
No, I think I can hear Kenneth. I can hear Kenneth all right.
Can you, Kenneth?
Mm-hmm.
Kenneth.
Well, why don't you have Julie and Michael hang up and maybe it's their phone?
Oh, I did. I just hung them up just to see. Yeah, I'm sorry I had to do that, Judy. Michael, forgive me. But, again, we're on the air and we're trying to get a clean quality. And it seems like one of the line has, like, maybe a storm raging in the area.
Huh.
Well.
I can hear you both very fine. I mean,
okay,
I just...
If everyone's okay and hears each other okay, Troika, I love you. Forgive my interruption. If you have any problems, just scream, and I'll probably hear you in the studio.
Okay.
But
in the meantime, let's let Kenneth and I sort it out and hope that everyone can hear us.
You got it. We'll give it a try.
Okay.
All right.
Thanks.
You bet.
Kenneth.
Yes, ma'am.
Well, we now have 47 minutes left of our 55. But
No. You guys can go over.
Go over? Don't we have someone behind me?
Well, you do, but I'll back him up. When things like this happen, everybody gets their time and just have fun. We'll back the others up and we'll start him a little bit late. We're not that professional yet, Troika, and I hope we never get there.
Okay, well, I'm going to reset my timer for 50 minutes.
All right.
Wait. Clear. 5000. Click. Okay, we've got 49 minutes and 58 seconds. So, Kenneth, without further ado, why don't you tell everyone about your very first experience with Saint Germain? And take as much time and as much detail as you want. Just make sure you talk loud.
Yes, ma'am. Okay.
don't call me ma'am. I'm not that old.
Yes, dear.
Dear's fine. I like dear.
Okay. Can I go now?
Yes.
Okay. My first thing with the Masters, I didn't know about the Masters. I didn't know who was the Masters or anything. But in my life, ever since I was very young, all sorts of little miracles that God wanted me to appear to me would appear to me. I don't know whether it's accident or on purpose, but when I was 12 years old, I was in Paris, and I came from a family who had quite a lot of money, and so I had somebody watching over me while I was at the Guignol show in Paris, and I saw the kids sliding down the slide, and I thought to myself, oh boy, that looked like fun, but instead of going down feet first, I think I'll go down head first, because it looked like it could go faster that way. So I went down head first, and I thought, well, I'll put my hands behind me, and that will make me go faster. But I wasn't thinking about how my landing was going to appear, but when I did, I put my hands behind me, and I went down head first, and what's going to happen, of course, what hits the bottom of the slide was my head. And there was some rocks there, and they hit a rock right in the center of my head. And, of course, of all things, it was my third eye chakra, but I didn't know that. Mm-hmm. And when I knocked myself out and I came to, guess what? I don't know whether it was Saint Germain or who it was, but they had opened my third eye, and all around me was a gnome and nomads and fairies and everything like that. And of course, I'm only 12 years old, and they said, "Hi, Kenneth, we're your friends." And I talked back to them and everything like that. So when the nurse who was supposed to be watching me came over, he said, "Oh, he's lost his mind. He cracked himself his head in the middle of the head, and now he's talking about fairies and gnomes and things like that." So that was something that God had given me. And of course, the different doctors from all over Europe were sent in to check on the strange little boy who saw things that nobody else saw. So this doctor said, "Well, it's God's gift to you, and you'll be able to see things that nobody else does." And so just...
Wow, you were blessed to have such an enlightened doctor.
Be very quiet about it and don't say anything. And you play with them or do something. And so my parents couldn't understand how come, instead of boys and girls I played with, I go in the estate where I lived, there were fountains, and I go play in the fountains with the Undines and the Sylphs and talk to all of them. And, of course, my gnome I named Eric and Erica. And today I'm sitting here talking to you, and over on my couch, my friends have made little pillows for Eric and Erica, Timmy and Tommy, and Love and Joy. And they had appeared to me most of my life, on and off. And, of course, at several times, you know, God gave me these wonderful little people to play with. Well, anyway, this is long before I had met Saint Germain or even knew who it was. And it was, I was 16. It was about 4 years later. And I was still seeing, you know, seeing things, but it was after my grandfather had, he was a covenanter preacher, and I had told him about my gnomes and elementals, and he said, "Oh, that's wicked, seeing things that nobody else sees. That's evil spirits. I have to get rid of them for you." So he spanked me and spanked me, and I reached back, and I said, "Grandpa, Grandpa, I'm bleeding." He says, "Well, you've got to get rid of these evil spirits." So I did. I said I didn't see them anymore, and they disappeared. And then later on, you know, I still loved them and everything, but of course I didn't know until after I saw Saint Germain. And later on, somebody told me it was Saint Germain, and he really opened my third eye again. So, but anyway, that was another long story. So anyway, my Saint Germain story was, I was visiting some relatives in Scotland, and they said that my Irish cousins over in Ireland, one of them had died, and they wanted me to come over to the funeral. And of course, it's wintertime there in Ireland, Scotland, I mean, and it's pouring down rain. And I went to get on the train, and they took me down to the train, and I took my luggage, and I couldn't find any place to sit down. I went to coach after coach after coach, excuse me, and finally I got one coach just after the engine, and nobody wanted to sit there because if it was sunny, the smoke from the engine would pour into the windows, and nobody wants to breathe the smoke and the steam. So that was empty. So I went inside the coach, and there was nobody there, so I sat down, and it was cold, and there was no heat, and the light was flickering, and it was very dark, and I wanted to read my book. And the book I had was Autobiography of a Yoga, and I wanted to read it. Well, I put on my sweater because the room was cold, and all of a sudden there's a knock on the door, and this person came in, and of course in Europe, it's interesting. A lot of people wore rain capes, you know, capes over their shoulders. Mm-hmm. And this guy had a big cape on, and it was a purple cape, but I didn't know what purple meant or anything. And I noticed the clasp that he had on his cape was one was a lion and the other was a lamb. Well, I didn't know what that was meaning because that's in the Bible, but I didn't know about that. And then he said, "Young man, do you mind if I come in sit in here with you?" And I said, "Oh, yes." And when he came in and talked, he said, "Hello." I said, "Oh, you have a Hungarian accent," because my grandmother, you know, is part Hungarian. And he said, "Oh, no, I'm from a place near Hungary." Well, I didn't know that, you know, Saint Germain came from Transylvania.
Right,
guess
it's
what?
Right next to Hungary.
It's right near Romania. Mm-hmm. But he didn't say that at all. And then he said, how are you doing? I said, fine, except it's cold in here, and the light is flickering, and it's not bright enough for me to read. He says, oh, I'll fix that. And he reached into his sort of a big, looked like a huge purse. It was woven and so forth. It had fleur-de-lis on it, but I didn't know what fleur-de-lis were.
And oh, so you didn't tell me this part before. Okay, the fleur-de-lis,
well,
yeah.
I didn't know what the fleur-de-lis were.
Uh-huh.
And he opened this big sort of purse, and he undid it, and out came this book. And he put the book in his lap, and it had all this strange writing on it. And he says, well, the book will help you. Will help us. And he said, help us. And all of a sudden, the light started going on, and the heat in the room, and so I took my sweater off and put it over my head, overhead there where the luggage was, and the lights came on, and I said, oh boy, now I can read. I just said that to myself. So
mm-hmm.
I'm reading the book, and after about an hour or so, he said, young man, you read that book, and you'll be on the path. Well, I didn't know what on the path was. I'd never heard any of these words, on the path or things like that. But I remember what he said about Paramahansa Yogananda. So anyway, it was about 2 hours, and it was pouring down rain and lightning and everything. I looked out several times, and it was really, really raining. And we had gone for about 2 hours, and finally, excuse me, I'm sorry. He got up and said, oh, I have to leave now. And I said, but the train is moving. It's going about 80 miles an hour. He says, oh, that's all right. He says, I'll get off. And so he got up and he left. And then he closed the book and put it away in his thing. The light started flickering, and it got cold in the room. And I said, boy, this must be some magic in that book. So anyway, I didn't know that it was the kind of writing that it was. But anyway, he got up and left, and then I got up and put my sweaters on because it was getting cold. As soon as I got my sweater over my head and I couldn't see anything, all of a sudden the train stopped real suddenly. All the luggage above my head, you know, it fell down because it
mm-hmm.
stopped. They were faced the other way towards the engine, and stopping it would pull them down, would have them fall, and they fell on me. I got up in the middle of the aisle and said, oh, my gosh, this man must have jumped or something. So I went over to the window and opened it up, and the engineer and the fireman were getting out, and they said, oh, there's a light ahead on the tracks. And I said, oh, I'm going to go out and see this thing. What's happening? So I went out, and of course, it's right next to the engine, so I got out and went out with them. And they went over, and here's this lantern in the middle, and he said, somebody was signaling us to stop. And they said, I wonder why. And I said, well, I hear a lot of water. And they said, oh, yeah, we're coming up to this river that flows by, and maybe that's where you hear. And I said, go turn the light up in the engine off the track. And so they did. And it turned up, and wow, the bridge that was supposed to be at the end of the track had moved over. It had broken. And we would have all gone right into the river, and everybody would have drowned. And I said, boy, whoever's stopped the train saved us all from drowning. And I looked over, and there were some buses over there, and the bus drivers are coming over, and he said, hey, we got a telephone call from a strange man with an accent. Of course, it was the same man that I saw who had the accent.
Mm-hmm.
And he told us about the bridge washing out, and said that the bridge had washed out, and that we needed to go on to where the boat train was to go to Ireland. And so we got back in the buses and went on to Ireland. But what happened when you went over to the lantern? The engineer says, look at that lantern. That's not a modern lantern. That's one that I saw in a museum. It's about 200 or 300 years old. And they said, yeah, how did they, whoever got that, how did they get that lantern? And I said, I don't know. And anyway, they took pictures of the lantern later, and I kept the picture around for a long time to tell my story so it would be true, but I lost that somehow or other and never got the picture of the lantern around, and nobody ever did know who it was with the foreign accent. Well, I did find out later when I found out through this church in Montana, which is see your teacher, and there's a guy there who is the guru there, and he says, well, I'm
right,
your
Mark Prophet.
Mark
speak
Prophet.
Speak up a little bit, or put your phone closer to your face.
Yes, ma'am.
That's better. That's better, Kenneth. Thank you.
Well, I was talking over it. I'm sorry.
Yeah,
and,
we want everyone to hear you.
Yes, ma'am. So he took me into the chapel, and he said, is that the guy? And he showed me this picture, and I said, yeah, that's him, but he's got a better-looking beard than that. That's too much of a beard. I mean, he was really clean-shaven. He had a sort of a toupee and very handsome, and they said, well, maybe
had a toupee?
Not a toupee. Well, you know.
St. Germain had a toupee.
Well, the thing on the end of his chin, you know.
Oh, like a goatee type of thing.
Yeah, well, I'm sorry. Anyway, well, it wasn't a big beard he had. He didn't have all that.
Right.
My Jesus didn't have that either. Jesus really looked sharp. Anyway, let's go back to St. Germain. And he said, and it had that strange writing behind him. And I said, well, what is that? And he said, well, that's Kabbalic writing. That's an ancient writing. He said, all you have to do is just look at it, and it will heal whatever problem you have. So anyway, maybe I should see that. Stop this cough of mine. So anyway, that's how I found out it was St. Germain.
And you realized that writing was the same writing that you saw on the book.
On the book, yeah.
Mm-hmm.
It was the same writing. He had mm-hmm. held the book up, so I looked at the writing, and that writing was the thing. It was, I knew I needed a light in there, and so I could read, and the heat in there, and that's exactly what happened. Just by looking at the writing, that's what happened. But I found that out later.
Mm-hmm.
So if you see the writing behind it, when you have St. Germain's picture in the writing, just look at St. Germain, but also look at the writing, because that will help you too.
Mm-hmm. Well, that picture that you're talking about with the writing is a specific artwork from the, Church Universal and Triumphant.
That
what
yeah.
it is? By Elizabeth Clare Prophet, and people can buy that picture on their website.
Yeah, the writing is there, yeah.
Yeah, it has a...
So you get the picture with the writing on it.
Mm-hmm.
Because it's got the Kabbalic writing. Well, anyway, that was the one time they saved my life on the train. Then another time, I had, you know, in my life, if I ever want to see my scrapbook, it's very interesting. I used to be an ice skater, a dancer, and everything else. And Lanello told me, he says, all your stories are true. And he says, the one thing that what makes your stories true is that you have a big imagination. And he says, you know what imagination is? It's I am magic in this creation.
Mm-hmm.
So I use that all the time. When I want it to rain, and it needs rain here in Tucson, I go out and imagine the clouds are going to get darker, and they do get darker. And when I was there running the bookstore in CUT, I used to have the children come there, and they would help me, and I would, St. Germain and I and the children would make it rain, and I make it rain all the time here in Tucson when we need it.
Mm-hmm.
And boy, they needed it last summer, so we got a lot of rain. But
when last summer? Was it in August?
Yeah,
cause
the monsoons.
Yeah, not last August. It was the August before. I was in Tucson at a conference. And we had the most magical, wonderful, gorgeous thunderstorm. And I went outside to watch them, and it reminded me so much of Merlin the magician
St. Germain was Merlin the magician.
Yes, I know. But Merlin used to make lightning by, just snapping his
fingers,
flicking his fingers, and lightning would come out. And that's exactly how that storm was appearing. I told everyone, oh my God, it's Merlin. St. Germain's here. It's Merlin.
Well, I was doing it in those days too. Like a couple of years ago, I've been doing it all the time here in Tucson.
Uh-huh.
We really do need the rain, and I love to do it. So I have Renee and I go out. We make it rain. Anyway, everybody can do it. You just have to have a big imagination. And
right.
With me around, you have to have a big imagination. You know, I wanted to be an ice skater, and I was in Pasadena Ice Rink, And I had this young girl was there, and I was only 17. And I said, let's be an ice skating star. And she said, okay. And I said, get on my shoulders, and we'll twirl and see if we can, somebody will notice it. So we twirled. And after we twirled, I put her down, and this guy came over to us. This was when I was only 17 years old. The war hadn't started yet. And the guy said, young man, said, see that girl up there in the audience, up there, sitting up there? And I said, no. I said, she said, that's Sonia Heine. She wants to start the California Ice Capades, and we want you and your partner there to be in our show. And I said, oh, great. So here was my imaginator started working already,
mm-hmm.
and I became in California Ice Capades. And then later on, I went to Europe, and I skated there. In London, I skated for the Queen of England, and I skated in Paris and London and so forth. And that's another thing that Saint Germain did for me one time. We were all a big success there in the Palais de Glace in Paris. And I was skating, and I was showing off, as usual. And I think Saint Germain put a little sequin down in the ice, and my skate caught it, and I tripped. My partner was above me, and she fell. And as she fell, she just split open my leg. And, of course, she hurt her ankle very badly, so she couldn't skate, and neither could I. And we were supposed to go to Spain that next day. Well, everybody went to Spain, and everybody in the airplane was killed but my partner and I, because we had a little accident. Well, when I was in the hospital, I woke up, and I was waking up, and Saint Germain was standing by the bed. This is before I woke up, and he said, see, Kenneth, I've saved your life again. And it was in the newspaper that morning about how we were saved and we didn't mm-hmm. die in the plane that everybody died in. And so I have the picture that they use in the magazine. Is here I am saved again from being killed.
So and when Germain and is, when he, I'm sorry. Go ahead.
So he said, well, I saved you again. And I said, oh, thank you, Saint Germain. That was when I was waking up at
mm-hmm.
the hospital. I said, well, I didn't appreciate my leg being cut open. He said, well, he says, you're alive, aren't you?
This is much better than death.
Yeah, he's a big joker.
I wanted to ask you before you move on is, when you saw him standing by your bed at the hospital, outside of, I'm sure, the clothing being different, did he look the same?
Well,
did he look?
Oh, yes,
His appearance was the same?
He looks handsomer every time I see him. I mean, you know, he changes his beard just like we do, you know. And
uh-huh.
They're not immaculate gods. I mean, they like to go into the modern thing. And
oh, yes, I know. He always looks different every time I see him.
He looks different every time I see him, and he looks better, too. So, I mean,
mm-hmm.
And it's sort of the way we like. He likes to appear the way we think he ought to look like, but... yeah, he looked a little different. And then another mm-hmm. time, too, you know, whenever I see him, he's a little different, too.
And well, you know, I asked him one time, why do you always look different? And since you know he's a joker, and we might as well let everyone else know that he's a little bit of a joker, his immediate response was, because I can.
Oh,
and
exactly
then,
right.
Then
they
But then he gave me the real reason. He said, because I want you to recognize my energy, not my
right.
appearance. He says, appearances
right.
can be copied and duplicated, but energy cannot.
Right,
so
and the energy that he's giving you at that time.
Right.
Because after I, you know, after he had taught me, told me about Paramahansa Yogananda, and then I remembered that. I was not in the teachings yet, and then I went, and then... he came to me and he says, I'm going to help you find Paramahansa Yogananda. And I said, in a dream, in an etheric dream, not
mm-hmm.
physical. And I said, great. And the next thing I knew, I'm sitting on a bench near the ashram there in Pacific Palisades. And I looked up and here's this guy in a yellow monk suit or a guru suit, and it's Paramahansa. I said, oh, you're Paramahansa Yogananda. I said, I heard about you. He says, yeah, I think I've heard about you, too. And I said, oh, dear. Maybe St. Germain's been talking to him. I don't know. But he said, you want to learn to meditate? And I said, yes. How did you know that? And he said, well, you wouldn't be sitting on this bench here with your hands in your lap like that. He says, move over and I'll meditate with you. And so I moved over and I tried to meditate and I didn't go anywhere. And he said, here, just put your hand in my hand and then we'll meditate some more. And I said, okay. So I put my hand in his hand. And the next thing I knew, the ocean was in front of me. And all of a sudden, I felt like I was floating, but the ocean was underneath me, you know, below me. And I opened my eyes, and I'm floating above the ocean. I said, Paramahansa, what are we doing? And he says, you're in your finer body, Kenneth, and you'll be able to do this later on when you get a new job, you know, that you're going to get. You're going to the etheric, and you'll be able to leave your body anytime you want to. And I said, to go anywhere? And he said, yes, to go to the etheric or go wherever you want to. And I said, oh, wow, this is great. And I said, somebody told me about you a long time ago. He said, I'd be on the path if I knew you. And he said, I think you're on the path. And he said, look back there. And I looked back, and I was sitting back there with him, and he said, that's your four lower bodies. You're in your finer body up here floating over the ocean. He said, you'll learn that you have separate bodies and that you're always in the same bodies all the time. And I said, oh, great. So anyway, St. Germain guided me to Paramahansa Yogananda. And then he guided me to Mr. Prophet. And Mr. Prophet guided me back to my gnome again because I told him that I had a gnome when I was very, very young and I had accidentally opened my third eye. And he said, well, God seems like he wants you to have your third eye open again. And I was with him when we were in the Orient, and so we were sitting in the bus, and he said, here, I'll open your third eye again, and he clobbered me in the head, and all sorts of lights went on, and all of a sudden, over in the bench right across from me, I said, oh, look, Eric and Erica and Timmy and Tommy and Love and Joy, the whole family's here again, and he said, of course, they've never left you.
Right, and so, I just couldn't see
and
them
he said, and all the rest of the gang, St. Germain and me and El Moya and all the rest of them. And he said, we are all one and under God. And I said, oh, great. So I have my gnome, and I have you, and I have St. Germain.
Gosh, so fabulous. Fabulous story. Well, the reason why I was led to call you is because Julie told me the story about the ring that you got from Pearl and
Pearl. Bob and Pearl.
And I knew Pearl when she was still on the Earth plane. And Bob had already left before I met them.
They were brother and sister, weren't they?
No, they were they were just friends. They were business partners or they created a ministry together. And each one was married to somebody else, but they knew that they were twin flames. Twin flames are not always in a romantic relationship when they're embodied together. In fact, they seldom are. They come together to do the work, but then once they leave the earth plane, then they are, you know, partners for all aspects on the higher plane. So I called, and I had seen the ring that Pearl had that St. Germain manifested for her, and I was curious to hear if your ring looked like the one that I saw with Pearl. So that's why I called you initially, and it turns out the ring isn't exactly the same, but the story is fascinating, so why don't you, and that was another time when St. Germain entered into your life and was instrumental, so... Why don't you tell people about that?
Well, before I was joined the churches, before I got religion or everything you might say, I was, you know, I've been around the world and I was ice skating and everything, and then I became a photographer, and I had just learned about climbing the highest mountain, and I heard about Amethyst and I heard about St. Germain, and I hadn't found out yet that the person I met a long time ago was St. Germain, but I said, well, probably this guy would know. And so I'm going to join his group going to the Orient and talk to him and ask him questions. And, of course, he answered them and said that the person I met on the train there was Saint Germain. Well, anyway, the other thing with Saint Germain is that I met Saint Germain again, but I hadn't known it was him. It was when I was in Rio de Janeiro, and I was on the ship, and I saw that Saint Germain has a violet amethyst, and I wanted to get one. So I went with all the ladies, and I saw one I wanted, and it was about $400, but I only had $200 with me. So I told the man, "Yeah, keep the store open. I'm going back to the ship. I'll get the rest of the money for you, and I want to buy that ring." So he said, "Yeah, I'll leave the store open, and you can come back, and you can pay me." So I went back to the ship to get the money, and I came back, and while he was in the safe getting his ring, I heard this voice, and it was a beautiful voice, and he said, "Kenneth, I have decided that we have decided that that ring is not for you. We have a cosmic ring for you, I'm going to give you a puzzle, and my name is Saint Germain, and the puzzle is..."
We're losing your voice again.
"The puzzle is 1111111. And I said, "Oh dear, what kind of puzzle is that?" He said, "Well, I'm a trickster." He says, "I like people to solve the puzzle. You solve the puzzle, and you'll get your ring." And I said, "Oh dear." So I go back in the ship, and I kept thinking, 1111111. So I said, "Well, the ship's traveling around the world, and probably the 11th month, the 11th day, the 11th hour, the 11th minute, and the 11th second, then I'll probably see the ring." So I was traveling around the world, and an 11th month, 11th day came, and I was in Australia, and I was in King's Cross, and it was 11 minutes after 11. And I said, "Oh, I've only got 11 seconds more." And just as 11 seconds was coming around, a bus was coming around the corner, and it went up and over the corner, and I had to step back so it wouldn't run over my toes up against the wall, and it came down on the other side, and the sun was at 11 o'clock, and it hit the back of the bus and flashed across the street over to this jewelry window, and the ring that I'm talking about flashed back at me, and I said, "That must be the ring that whoever that was, I call him the Joker, whoever it was, the Joker, to tell me that 1111 wanted me to have." And I went into the office, and I said, I want to buy that ring." And they said, "Oh, we can't sell it to you. It's on consignment. But the people that are selling it, there's a brother and sister, but I didn't know." And she said that their name is Bob and Pearl, and they want you to meet them in the Century Square downtown in the next 15 minutes, 20 minutes, and they want to talk to you about why you want the ring. So I called them up, and they said, "Well, meet me there." And I went down to Central Square in Australia, Sydney, and I went to the tea house, and all of a sudden I saw this beautiful girl. She was blonde, and she looked like she's from Venus. She had blonde hair, and in her hair she had a central sun thing in her hair. It was like a big sun, and around her waist she also had a sun. And then she had sandals on. She didn't have shoes. And they had little golden suns on them, too. And then she said, "Oh, my brother will be here in just a minute." She knew who I was even before I was introduced to her. She said, "Oh, you're Kenneth." And she waved to me. And then she said, "My friend will be there." I think she said my friend. She didn't say my brother, but said my friend will be there. And he came, and he was in white, and he had a sun around his waist, too. And he had blonde hair. And so I thought they were brother and sister. But their clothes glowed. I mean, they were so white. I was going to ask them what kind of bleach they used to make their clothes so white. I didn't know that they weren't even in this body, the body.
Right.
They weren't in the regular body. I didn't know it. But they looked very young and very handsome. And I talked to them, and I told them about the 1111111 and the thing that this master had told me. I said, "This master," I didn't say who he was, and Bob told his sister or his friend, "This must be the one who's supposed to come." And then Bob turned to me, and he said, oh, you have $150 in your pocket, and that's what I had in my pocket. He said, I'll give you the ring for $100, and you have to keep $50 to pay the bill and get home and go to the movie that you want to go to. And I said, okay. So they gave me, I gave them $100, and they gave me the ring. So then after the movie was over, I went back, and I said, did you get any money from Bob and Pearl? And they said, oh, yeah, they gave us $100. I said, that's interesting. I only gave them $100 for the ring. And they said, well, I guess we didn't need it. And they wanted to see the ring, and I showed it to them, and they said, oh, that's a beautiful ring. Anyway, so I got the ring back. I got the ring, and I still have it. And it's got, I've seen it in a jewelry thing that it's the Treasures of the Tsars, and it came from Russia. And I ran into this Harry Winston. He was coming back from Chicago, and he was on the same plane I was on. And he said, that's a beautiful ring you have. And I said, he said, I've never seen one like it. It changes color all the time. And he says, that's really a beautiful Alexandrite. He says, that's a royal ring. I've seen pictures of that ring. And I said, well, how much is it worth? And he said, well, at least it's worth $1 million or more. And I said, oh. Well, anyway, so I've got the ring, and I'll show it to you.
Yeah.
Now, I don't know whether it's whether they were the physical Bob and Pearl, because they were so young looking, and their clothes were so bright, and they didn't want any money. And
I'm sure it was their etheric.
Must have been etheric, yeah.
Their ascended self. Because what year was that?
That was before 1970.
Okay. Because Pearl was here physically in Mount Shasta until she left her body in 1990.
Oh, yeah, well, it must have been then, because...
Yeah,
you know,
and in 1990, when she died one day, or she really didn't die, she left, but she did leave the physical body. She did not turn to light and take the body with her, but she did have amazing experiences prior to that. Anyway, she was, it was one day before her 90th birthday when she transitioned.
When I saw them, I mean, she looked like she's about 23, and he looked like he's about 30. I mean, they looked in the prime of life. So.
You're fading again.
Hmm?
Your voice is fading again.
Oh, they were in the prime of life.
Yes. Well, that's the way we all look on the other side, on the inner plane. We're all young and gorgeous.
I have a picture of me, what I look like on the other side. I should send it to you, because you'll see me when you come to the etheric. This is what I look like. It's the same picture that I took out of the ice skating thing when I was in London, and my wife and I stole it out of the marquee, you know, around the theater there. And
that's
exactly what I look like today in the etheric. A star.
Well, I have fun on the etheric. I change my hair color all the time to match my outfits.
Me too.
You know, I'll have long blonde hair one time and flaming red hair another time, and dark hair, and it surprises me, you know.
The reason I give out this one picture of me is I want people to come and recognize me, so they don't, if I go around changing my hair all the time, they might keep the wrong guy.
Yeah, I'm always amused when I see myself. It's a point of curiosity for me, like, oh, what am I wearing this time, and what color is my hair? So tell us how when Yogananda told you that you would be able to go in and out. Go to the etheric planes whenever you want, and I know you do
well,
that.
That's what happened, because I have decided. Well, what I did it was someone who I liked very much, and their nephew was going to die, and I didn't want that to happen, so I thought, I said, I was in India, and I said, there's a chance for
talk
me
louder, talk louder.
This nephew was going to die, and he lived in Montana, and he was going to die on a certain day in another year, the next year, in Montana. And when I was in India, I asked, can I help somebody's death karma and take their karma for them? And they said, yes, you can. So I said, okay, I'll do that. And I said I'd do it, and then I didn't think about it. Well, the year came around when he was supposed to have this happen, and I was on a field trip with his aunt, and she's the one that told me about that his death karma was coming. And we were on a picnic, and I fell, forward and cracked my head open again, and knocked myself out, and I was bleeding. And she said, oh, can I help you? And I said, oh, no. I said, it's all right. I just have to make a trip. And so for 5 minutes, I was unconscious. And during that 5 minutes, I wanted to know how far God's consciousness goes. And I went through this planet and the next planet and the other planets, and I went on and on and on. And I saw God was everywhere, and I said, wow. I said, I didn't know this. And then when that was over, then Saint Germain said that the reward for service is more service. I saw him when I was traveling in the different planets. And he said, you know, the reward for service is more service. And you will be working with children in the etheric. You'll guiding them to heaven and guiding them from heaven to earth. And you'll see that for the next 10 or 15 or I'm still doing it, of course,
mm-hmm.
for the next 10 or 15 or 20 years. And so that's what I've been doing. So when I learned to go to in the afternoon, that's why I always have everybody not call me between 3 in the afternoon and 5, because I'm going to the etheric. I'm in the etheric. So.
And can you give the listeners any maybe tips or techniques or as to how maybe they can go to the etheric by will as well? Or is it just something?
Well, I don't know. The best way to learn or do it, I think, is with meditation. And I don't know how many people have read the book Autobiography of a Yogi or have tried to meditate. But I think if they do the meditations and they meditate, they'll learn to leave their body eventually and ask their I Am Presence to help them too. And with their imagination, have the imagination open, have their heart open to whatever happens. And that
imagination is very important.
It's I am magic mm-hmm. in this creation. And Saint Germain is the one who said that's what imagination is.
Imagination is how we create. Whatever we imagine, we actually do create it.
And that will come true, yes.
Mm-hmm. If not on this plane, on another plane.
That's true. It's absolutely. Because when you're on another plane, say it's my house, and all of a sudden the children want something to eat. I said, well, let's go over and sit down and imagine what you'd like to have. And one little boy says, oh, I'd like to have a hot dog with lots of mustard. And boopity-boop, there's a hot dog with lots of mustard. And,
mm-hmm.
and just for one example, one day I was at my house, and I only had 2 slides, and I had all these children. I had a lot of children from the tsunami that had happened. That was a couple of years ago. I had 3,000 children there, and they were all coming to my house for R&R. And I stood by the slide, and I said, I need 12 more slides on each side going into the pool. And bippity-boom-bam, there's 12 more slides, and here's all the kids that were there had a chance to go into the pool. And I went down the pool. And they pushed me into the pool as they were going down the slide. And they were all jumping around me and in the water and everything. And I looked up, and guess who was up there on the side by the pool?
Oh, I'm sure it was St. Germain.
And he said, "Hey, Uncle Kenneth," he said, "I have now found the children's guru." And he said, "Now I know what you're meant to be." And I said, "Well, thanks a lot." He said, "Well, you're having fun, aren't you?" And I said, "Yes." And he said, "The children are too, aren't they?" And I said, "Yes." He said, "Well, love and fun is a very important thing." So there you are. I'm the children's guru.
And how do you help the children come back to the earth plane?
Well, a lot of them know that I do help them. And so I meet them there at my house. And, oh, just for example, there was one boy who loved to swim. And of course, he's a teenager. And the most of them are teenagers when they leave the heaven area. And they have to go down and they are to start materializing in the mother's body. And they arrive, they start going as teenagers, and by the time, is it 9 months or 6 months or whatever?
9 months. Put your phone closer to your face.
They materialize as little babies in the mother's womb.
Mm-hmm.
From the teenagers. But they still remember you. You remember them as teenagers. And then when you see them down here, they can talk to you even inside the mother's womb or even when they're mm-hmm. out, because they still talk like they did in heaven. It's all mental. You know, it's mental.
Right.
Because up in heaven, you don't know. The masters may speak one tongue, the angels another, God another, and it's all mental. Then you can understand everybody. So they're down here, and they don't speak English. They do it mentally, and of course the mothers don't know that. And they scream at the children, "Don't go near that. I don't want you to eat that. The sugar's not good for you." And of course they're screaming at the child. The child don't know what she's saying. And then she's not using her mind, she's using her mouth.
Mm-hmm.
And then I come over and I say to the little boy and the little girl mentally, I said, "Your mommy don't want you to eat that because that's not good for you. You shouldn't cry." And they stop crying, and then the mother looks at me and says, "What control do you have over my child? You just look at him and he stops crying." I says, "Well, he doesn't understand you, I think. That's maybe it." She says, "Well, are you psychic or something?" I said, "No. I just know that children, when they come to Earth, they don't speak. I mean, they do everything mentally." So that's, anyway, that's
what it's telepathic, yeah.
Telepathic, that's what I meant.
Yeah. I've got to tell you, we've got 5 minutes left. I've got to tell you, during this whole thing. Hello. Well, we've gone over time. Don just tells me he cut Kenneth off in the middle of a fascinating story. We have 30 seconds to say goodbye. So I want to thank everyone for listening. I hope that these stories inspired you and were of interest to you. I know I love these types of things. It's such confirmation that the masters really do exist. And I want to thank Kenneth from the bottom of my heart for being a good sport and coming on and sharing his experiences. And to everyone out there, Violet blessings. And next week my guest will be Omaron and Antara, who are incarnated twin flames. They live right here in Mount Shasta, and they have some fascinating stories. So goodbye, everybody. Thank you. Good night.
Good night. Love you.